Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirim on Daf Yomi. We're now in Ketubot Daf Tzadi Hey Amud Aleph at the final Mishnah of the 10th Perek of Masechet Ketubot. And in this relatively brief Mishnah, we continue with the system that has been used throughout the Perek, which is a man with multiple wives. But of course, each Mishnah and each scenario was there to highlight a different consideration. So the first couple of Mishnayot that dealt with a man married to two wives was focused on the consideration of Ketubat Banim Dichrin. The circumstance of the Mishnah with three wives was concerned about a case where there was depleted assets and they all are going to come and collect from the same date, how they divided up. The fourth one was issue of precedence and the oath from one to the other. And now we go back to a situation of two, but with a curious twist. Nisha Nasui Shtei Nashim. So a man is married to two wives. He has one field that is the field from which all the ketubot will be collected. And he sold it. And the first wife, the earlier wife, who had the first claim on the field, wrote what we'll call a quitclaim deed, a dinu dvarim, as we saw in the beginning of the ninth perek, to the lokeach, saying, I will not dispute you over this property. Hashniya motziya mi halokeach. So now what happens? When the husband dies, the first wife cannot claim it from the buyer because she already quit on that. The second wife can come and claim. So, motziyam elokeach. V'rishona min hashniya. Now the first wife can come and claim it from the second wife because she's an earlier Baal Chov. And she has no quit claim with the second wife. V'halokeach min harishona. Now the lokeach, the original buyer, can come and take it back from the first wife because she agreed that she wouldn't contest him for this property. And this situation continues until somebody puts a stop to it. Which is when they sit down and they work it out and they divide it up or however they work out their compromise. The Mishnah ends, and the Perek ends, with seven kind of enigmatic words, which the Gemara at the very end will decipher. So we'll talk about it at the end. Okay, the first question the Gemara has is, why does her writing, Dinu Dvarim, why is that meaningful at all? If you recall from the beginning of the ninth parak, when we had the situation where a man said, Dinu Dvarim, that he removed himself from any claims over his wife's property, we asked the same question, and we used the same proof to demonstrate, to bolster our question. Who cares if she writes to him, Dinu Dvarim? Two people are disputing over property, and the one who holds the property says, I have nothing to do with it, I'm not going to challenge you about it. Lo amar klum, that's meaningless, because gifting a property does not happen by abdicating ownership, it happens by actively gifting it or reassigning it. And therefore, dinu dvarim, meaning I will not challenge you about this, doesn't do anything to transfer rights. So the answer is, this is a situation where he made a kinyan. In other words, she said, listen, you bought the property for my husband, I'm not going to challenge you for it. And the man says, okay, let's make a kinyan on that. And they make a kinyan sudar, some sort of thing, where it bolsters the statement, where it's now not just a statement in the air, but it's got some weight to it. Now, it's still, what's the difference? Because after all, she could turn around later on when the husband dies and she wants to collect her ketubah, and the guy pulls out this shtar that says dinu dvarim, and witnesses that saw them make a kinyan, and she could say, yeah, but I didn't really mean it. Now, that sounds a little strange, so let's clarify. Tema nachat ruach hasita levali. Why doesn't she just claim, I was doing it to make my husband happy. After all, my husband sold you a field. I didn't want you to feel concerned about it. My husband to feel bad about the sale. So I wrote dinu dvarim, but I didn't really mean it. Now, that sounds absolutely specious until we see that there's some support for it. Milo tanan, we have a Mishnah in Gittin. Lakach min ha'ish v'chazar v'lakach min ha'isha. If a man comes and buys nichsimalog, and he buys it from the husband, and then he goes back and buys it from the wife, mekho batel, it's still batel. Why? Because normally, if the wife can't sell nichsimalog because the husband has a claim over it, the husband can't sell nichsimalog because it's not his to sell. But if they both sell it, then it should be good. How come if the husband first sells it, and then the wife confirms the sale, as it were, why is it no good? Because she can claim, I was doing it to make my husband happy. He sold the property. I wanted to show him I love him, so I signed on it too. But of course, I didn't really mean to get rid of the property. So why don't we say the same thing here? Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Chista, lo kasha, ha Rav Meir, ha Rav Yehuda. So Rav Chista says, I have found that the issue of Nachat Ruach as a valid claim is a machloket Tanaim. Rav Meir doesn't accept it, Rav Yehuda does. Which means that our Mishnah must be Rav Meir, who says that we don't accept such a claim, and when she wrote Din Udvarim, we assume that she really means it. And the Mishnah Gittin is Rabbi Yehuda, where she could say that. And we said about Tanya, how do we know that Rabbi Yehuda disagree about this? Katav the Rishon Velo Chatmalo. If the husband wrote a field that was assigned to a ketubah, and he sold it to a person, and the wife did not sign off on it, L'sheni v'chatmalo, then he sold it to another guy, and she signed off on it, Ibdak tuvata, Rabbi Meir says, that's it, she's lost her ketubah, because she has consented, and she can't claim, I was just doing to make him happy. Rabbi Yehuda here now explicitly says, she can make the claim, I was doing it to make my husband happy, why are you bothering me? You have no claim against me. I get my ketubah back. Alright, so that means that Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's a valid claim, Rabbi Meir holds it's not a valid claim, but that makes it a little curious, because that means that our Mishnah, which is unattributed in ketubot, is based on Rabbi Meir's approach, and the Mishnah in Gittin, which is unattributed, is based on Rabbi Yehuda's approach. And of course, Rabbi, who decided which halachot should be presented in the Mishnah, and anonymously, is deciding the halacha, which means the halacha is inconsistent between the two masachtot. Rabbi satam lahacha ka Rabbi Meir, v'satam lahatam ka Rabbi Yehuda? Why would a Rebbe present it anonymously here like Rav Meir and there like Rav Yehuda? Amar Papa begrusha b'divrei hakol. Rav Papa says, actually, our Mishnah is talking about a case where he already divorced. I'll explain it in a second. And there, everybody would agree, even Rav Yehuda would agree, she doesn't have a claim of Nachat Ruach Hasita the Baali, for obvious reasons, but let's play it out. What it means is, the way we're reading our Mishnah, and this is difficult, we will not stay with it, is that the husband had two wives. He divorced the earlier wife, and before she collected the ketubah, he sold the property to another guy, and she wrote Din Udvarim. Nobody would claim she was doing it to make her husband happy, considering he's now her ex-husband. Before she collected anything, he died. So the other wife is an almana, she's a grusha, and then that plays the scenario. But of course, it's very strange, because the Mishnah should have included the fact that they got divorced, that the first one of wife was divorced beforehand. So therefore, Ravashi has a different take. Ravashi amar kula Rameir hi. The entire Mishnah is Rav Meir, meaning Rav Meir is both in Gittin and here. It's all Rav Meir, and Rabbi Paschal like Rav Meir. Meaning Rav Meir sometimes does accept the notion that you can claim Nachat Ruach. V'yad kam lo kam Rav Meir hatam, why did Rav Meir over there say that you can't claim it in the case where Rav Meir explicitly speaks up and says she lost her ketubah? Because there were two buyers, and the first buyer she didn't sign off on, and the second one she did sign. Because we turned to her and say, when she says, I didn't mean it, if you were just doing it to make your husband happy, you should have done it for the second guy, for the first guy too. The fact you didn't do it for the first guy, you did it for the second guy, means you really meant it for the second guy. But if there's only one buyer, I feel Rav Meir Moda, that for Rav Meir in the Mishnah Gittin, will agree that if there's only one buyer, she can say, yeah, I signed off to make my husband happy, but, and that's why the Mishnah says that if you buy it from the husband and then you buy it from the wife, it's still canceled. That's Rav Meir, who says there's only one buyer. She was signing off to make her husband happy. Good. But the problem is, of course, our Mishnah includes only one buyer, and it doesn't work. So we have to answer, our Mishnah has to include a case where the husband first sold it to another guy, the wife did not write Din Udvarim, and then he sold it to this next guy who's in our Mishnah. Which means there's a shadow lokeach in our Mishnah who's not mentioned. And therefore, a mayor, who is the halacha, would say, in this case, you can't say Nachat Ruach, and therefore the Din Udvarim, the quit claim, is valid, and she has no claim on the property. Now, Tanana Tam. We have a Mishnah in Gittin. Ein nifra'in min chasim mshu'abadim v'makom sheish nechasim b'nei chorin v'afilu hein ziburit. If you borrow money from me, then I'm going to come and ask for payment. You don't have payment, so all of your land was attached. Let's say that half of your land was sold in the meantime, which means I would have a claim on it, but half the land is still yours. The stuff that's yours is called B'nei Chorin. It's unattached. It's free assets. The land that you sold subsequently, I have a claim on. It's mortgage property, but I can't go to mortgage property before I go to the free assets. So even if the B'nei Chorin are really poor quality, I'm stuck with them, and I can't go to the stuff that you sold. Now, that's the halacha. Now, Ibayalu, the question was asked, Ishtaduf ban b'nei chori mahu delitrof mishamdi. what happens if the free assets, the stuff that wasn't sold, is not just bad land, it gets flooded and it's absolutely unusable? Can I now go to the mortgage property, or am I stuck with what you've got? Toshma, let's see if we can solve it from our Mishnah. Katav l'rishon v'lachat ma'alo, not from our Mishnah, but from the Mishnah Gittin. Katav l'rishon v'lachat ma'alo, when the husband wrote it to the first guy, and she didn't sign, l'sheni v'chat ma'alo, yivdak tuvatav di Rameir. Rameir says that when she signs off to the second guy, she lost her ktubah. Why? Because there, where we have two lekuchot, and she didn't sign to the first, she signed to the second, therefore we can't say nachat ruach. Good, we got that. Now, but if you think that when the Bnei Chorin are flooded, you can go collect from the other stuff, which means, if you think that when the stuff that is accessible to you is absolutely unusable, you could go and now collect from the stuff that's less accessible, then, Nehid Ivdak Tuvatami Sheni, so it should be the case that since she lost her ktubah in collection from the second guy who bought it, because she signed off on it, Mirishon Mihatigbi, but should be able to collect now from the first guy, because relative to her husband, both of these guys are Meshubadim. But relative to the later buyer, the first guy is Meshubad. Because remember, when the first guy bought the property, there was still property in the husband's thing. So he's more Meshubad. She can't go to the second guy before she goes to the first guy. But remember, if she lost it from the second guy, she can't go to the first guy, the earlier buyer, before she goes to the later buyer. But if she knocked herself out of the later buyer by signing off, then shouldn't she be able to now go back? So it must be the case that she can't go back. That proves that if your accessible assets get destroyed, you can't go to the mortgage property. That's what it would seem to be. So he interprets the word ibda in that Mishnah as not meaning that she lost all claims on the ktubah. It just means she loses any claim to go to the sheni, but she can go to the rishon. That, of course, is very difficult, and Rav immediately contests it. Amar Rav shtei tshuvot b'davar. There's two answers to that. Chada, the first one is that ibda legamre mashma. When you say ibda, the implication is she lost it totally. Not she lost part of it, she lost some access, she lost it totally. V'od tanya, besides which we have a breita, lavamin ha'echad. If I borrow money from one guy, now I borrow $100,000 from you, amacharna chasav l'shnayim, and then I sold my property to A and B, two other guys. V'chatav balcho, and in order, not together, in sequence. V'chatav balcho v'lolokeach. And then you, the creditor, wrote a quitclaim deed to the second buyer. Lokeach sheni, to B. Zinvar me'en le'imach. En lo'a lokeach rishon klum. You can now not, when you come to me and I don't have the money, you cannot go to A. Why? Because A can say, when I bought property from your debtor, I left more property there. B later came and bought it? Not my problem. And you did a quitclaim on B? That's your problem. But you can't collect from me. What do we see from there? We see that if your accessible property is unusable, you cannot go back to the mortgage property. And the answer is no. Hatam hu da'afsi da'nafshi b'yadayim. No, here the creditor blew it himself. He wrote a quitclaim on the second guy. He knocked himself out of the running. That's not the same thing as flooding, which they call in the insurance agency an act of God, meaning something out of your control. Rather, of course, we call it an act of God also, but something that's out of your control. Here, the Baal Chov himself went out of his way and knocked himself out of the running by writing a quitclaim to the second guy. Good. So now the question that's still on the plate is, if it's flooded, what do you do? If it's you yourself took yourself out of the running for the accessible stuff, you can't go back to the Meshubad, of course, because you blew it. But what happens if it happens out of your control, like flooding? So Amar Yemar the Ravashi. He asked Ravashi, he said, I don't understand why you're even asking the question. It's obvious that you go because V'amasim b'chol yom. It's something that we judge every day that way. And what's the case that he's talking about? Dahu Gavra, there was a fellow, Demishkin Le Pardesa Lachavre Le Eser Shnin, Vikash Bachame Shnin. Let me explain the case. A fellow borrowed $100,000, let's say, from a guy, and he couldn't pay it back. And he had a vineyard, and the vineyard produced $10,000 a year. So he said, look, take the vineyard. For 10 years, you get to keep the vineyard and have the produce and everything else. And when 10 years are up, you leave the vineyard. We're even. The other fellow agrees to do it. That's called a mashkon. It's a particular kind of mashkon. We read about it in Bava Batra when you get to Chazkat HaBatim. Now, Ho Gavra Demishkein Le Pardesa Lachavre Le Eser Shnin. He did it for 10 years. Vikash Lachamesh Shnin. After 5 years, the property suddenly became old and was not productive at all. And what happened? The fellow who was stuck with the vineyard, who had only gotten half his loan back, came to the rabbis, and the rabbis wrote him a tirfa that he could now go and collect from later buyers of the debtor's property to collect his 5,000. Now, why is he able to do that? Here he has Bnei Chorin, and he's able to go collect from Meshubadim. Obviously, you see that when your accessible property becomes totally worthless, you can now go, absolutely unusable, you can now go to the mortgage property. So why are you even asking the question? That's the question. The answer is, also, in that case, the guys who bought the later property also made a mistake. People know that vineyards sometimes go bad earlier than you expect. And therefore, you should not have bought property from this guy when he was doing this kind of pledge with another fellow on his vineyard that may dry up and that fellow may come to you to claim it. You should have done your homework and not bought the property. The fact that you did, you lose. So in other words, again, it's a case where we're saying that if the accessible property is becomes unusable, you can go and claim for mortgage property where the guy who, where one of the players in it deliberately or carelessly put himself in a position where he was hurt. But that still doesn't answer about something where it's out of your hands, like a flood. So the answer is, V'yochata ishtaduf b'nei chori tarf mishabdi. The answer is that if they become flooded, yes, you can go collect from the Meshubadim, which of course instinctively we knew. The only question that was on the table here is, why are you even discussing it? We have this case of the vineyard. The answer is the cases are not alike. Now, the end of our parak deals with two different phrases of conditional gifts. Strangely enough, when you give a gift, you can control its direction even after you're out of the picture. And we'll see. It's called the acharecha. A man gives a woman a gift and says, and after you it goes to Ploni, meaning it's not going to go in the normal inheritance route, but when you die, it automatically goes to this next guy. I'm setting up a chain of ownership. That works. And then subsequently the woman, obviously while still alive, got married. So Abaye says the husband now is considered a buyer of that property. It's a new outside party who gets an interest in the property. And now the acharecha's out, which means if A gave it to Ms. B and said, and after you it goes to C, but Ms. B became Mrs. B, she got married in the middle, then Mr. B suddenly owns the property and C will never see it. All right? Now, come on, who does this accord with? We will see it's like Shimon Gamliel. Again, if a guy does an acharayich, yarad harishonu machar. This is acharecha, regular guy. A gives it to B to give to eventually to C. B sells it. Hasheni meotzmi al lekuchot. C can now claim it back from the buyers, like any other baal chov, because it says, I owned this property before you even thought about buying it. I owned it as a future. Divrei Rebbe, that's Rebbe. Rashbag Omer Ein L'Sheni El Mashishir Rishon. Not true. Rashbag says that the only part that C has is what B didn't sell. B's sale is valid. He keeps the money. C's out of the luck. Which means that Abaye's ruling follows from Shimon Gamliel, that to wit, that if a in a case of acharecha, if the middle person sells it, the sale is valid. In this case, the woman got married. The husband is considered a buyer, and acharecha is out. The last person is out. Now, umiyamar Abaye hachi, since when did Abaye support Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? V'yamar Abaye ezur ha-sha'arum. We use this phrase of a clever, evil person, the deceptive person. That's somebody who gives somebody else advice to sell property which will follow Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Meaning, if somebody is in the middle person of an acharecha deal, somebody comes up and gives them advice, listen, your family's not going to keep this because it's going to go to somebody else. Why don't you sell it and then you keep the money and you cut the other guy out? That's technically right, but Abaye says it's a lowlife, a guy who does something like that. Which means Abaye doesn't seem to support Rabbi Shimon, but that's not really true. He does say halacha k'Rashbag, he just says it's not nice to let people know that they can use this as a trick. So we said, Mika Martina say, Abaye didn't say in the first case, the girl should marry. Nisid Kamar, he said, if she marries, that's what happens. Because he's not saying, I'm advising this girl to get married, and that way you'll keep it from going to the next guy in line, because your husband will get it. Say, if you get married, it goes to the husband. That's Abaye's first statement. V'amar Abaye, Abaye has another statement which looks curiously parallel but really contradicts. Chasaylach v'acharayich liploni, again, a guy gives it to a girl, and afterwards to see. Machra umeta, she sold it. Now what happens if a woman sells her own property? If she outlives her husband, the sale is valid. If, on the other hand, she predeceases the husband can come and claim it as a Yerusha, which has an earlier claim on. So she sold it, and then she died. The husband can come and claim it back from the buyers. That's normal. That's the normal case. Now, in the meantime, we've got an acharecha there. The acharecha miad baal. The acharecha guy, C, can come and claim it from the baal because, after all, the deal was, I'm giving it to the woman, and when the woman dies, it goes to C. The woman's dead. So now, the lokeach has it. The husband can take it from the lokeach because he has an earlier claim on it. It's a Yerusha. The acharecha can come and claim it because really, from the woman, it should come to him. And by the way, and now the original buyer gets it back because he takes it from the acharecha guy because he says, after all, it was sold. But that means that the husband's role is not as a buyer. Before, Abaye said that the husband is a lokeach, and now he's saying the husband is not a lokeach, and it's taken away from him. Right? And when we begin on the chulu, we add the lokeach. In the end, everything sits with the lokeach. So now, Mishnah mihadit nana chuzot chalila. First of all, why is this any different than our Mishnah, where it said that the cycle keeps rolling? It keeps going in this circle, which means in this case, the baal should get it back from the lokeach, the acharecha from the baal, the lokeach from the acharecha, etc., until they settle it. Why? Shiasub sharbanayim. Hatam idlahu pseida lechulu. Because in our Mishnah, every person stands to lose. In our Mishnah, who do we have? We have the woman who's not getting her ketubah. We have a lokeach who's having his field usurped from him. And we have the other woman who's not getting her ketubah. Remember, there's two women and a yellow keach in there. Everybody's losing something. In our case, it's only the lokeach who has what to lose. After the acharecha didn't do anything, he's just named as a doni, as a beneficiary. And the Baal doesn't have anything to lose because this was not his property at all. It's only Lokeach who has what to lose, so therefore it ends up there. Now, Azal Rav from Amar Lishmata Kamed Rav Ashi. So Rav from came and reported all of this to Rav Ashi, the second ruling of Abaye. And then he asked, Mi Amar Abaye Hachi, since when does Abaye say that a Baal is a Lokeach? From Abaye, Nachasai Lach Vacharech Leponi, Am Davini Se Baal Lokeach Ave. Since when does Abaye say that the Baal is not a Lokeach, and that when the Baal is involved, the Acharecha is gone. Sorry, is still there. Abaye said, in the earlier case that we had, that I'm davening say, Baal Lokeach Avi, if the woman gets married, then the Baal is a Lokeach, and Acharecha is out. Vein Acharecha Mokum Baal Klum. So Abaye is being inconsistent. So Rav Ashi answered, Amalei Hatam Da Amar Lakshi Pnuya. In this particular case, the one you're just quoting now, when the Baal becomes a Lokeach, is when a guy gives a girl property before she's married, the husband's not on the horizon. And he says to her, I'm giving this to you, and after you it goes to C. In the meantime, suddenly, the Baal wasn't in the picture, which means the donor was not excluding the Baal. And therefore, when she gets married, the normal thing happens, the Baal becomes a Lokeach, and the end of the chain. Hacha de Amar Lakshi Nesua. In our case, the second case where the Baal is not a Lokeach, and it can leave the Baal, it's when the fellow gave it to her while she was married. It means, why did he say V'acharecha? To cut out the Baal. My kamerla acharayich likni baal lo likni. So, in other words, in the second case that Abaye had, where the baal does not keep it and does not interrupt the chain to acharecha, it's when it was given to her while she was married, and the reason the fellow said acharayich was to say, I wanted to go from you to see, not to your husband. So, husband was cut out. In the first case that Abaye quoted, where the baal is considered a lokeach, is when it was given to her before she was married. Husband comes in; he's a regular lokeach like any other lokeach. Good. Now, the end of the Mishnah, as I mentioned, had those seven strange words, v'chein balchov, v'chein isha balchov. What it means is as follows, Tana, v'chein balchov u'shnei lekuchot. The same rule of our Mishnah applies whether you have a lokeach and two ketubot, that's the case in the Mishnah, or you have a balchov and two buyers. And again, the balchov wrote a quit claim to the second buyer, so it goes in circles. The same is true about an isha balat chov, which of course is a woman coming to claim her ketubah, and two buyers. The same thing will apply, that they'll go in a circle until they make a settlement among them. Hadran alach mishen asui, Baruch Hashem, we've been zocha to finish the 10th parak, and Amir Tz Hashem, in the next podcast, we will begin the 11th parak, Halmanan Nizonet. Everyone should have a wonderful day.